coming up.
I'm not qualified to debate the science over climate change.
I'm not a scientist, nor am I a physicist.
I'm not a scientist.
Yes, everyone who denies man-made climate change has the same stirring message. We don't know what the f*** we're talking about.
People like to pretend that science is value neutral, but isn't science infused with values?
Think about of all the data that's out there, how much of it becomes available to you consciously. That's a filtering process that's driven by your education, your attention, your training, and all of that can be influenced by your political background.
Shouldn't politics just be kept out of science?
It's good to want objectivity, and I think you can still have it.
Our guest is Sharon Clough from Oregon State University.
The best way to be objective is not to try and get rid of politics, because I think that's important, but to make sure that the politics influencing your science is relevant and well supported by evidence.
Science and politics, friends or foes?
Coming up on Philosophy Talk. This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the campus of Oregon State University in Corvallis, where they stomp the ducks.
Our thinking originates at Philosopher's Corner down south at Stanford University. That's where Ken teaches philosophy, and I did for 40 years.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Now, today, we're thinking about science and politics. We're asking, are they friends or are they foes?
Well, there's a clear answer. It depends on where the money is.
Oh, come on, John. That's so cynical sounding.
Ah, come on. I'm serious. Ever meet a politician who was against a scientific project and thought it was an expensive boondoggle when it was going to be funded in their district? No, then it's really great science. The space station, the superconducting super collider.
Well, I can't say I've met anybody. You've got a point there. Okay.
And how many politicians turn a blind eye to scientific truth, on the other hand, in exchange for a few bucks from the likes of the tobacco lobby or the climate change deniers or the creationists?
Way too many. What's your point?
Nothing ever good comes from the intrusion of politics into science. We should keep the politics out of science and the science out of politics.
Nah, you can't possibly. That's too simple-minded, John. You can't possibly keep politics out of science. Come on, unless you're talking about ending all government funding of scientific research. An even worse idea is keeping science out of politics. We need scientists to speak truth to power, John.
Well, I think when science gets in bed with politics, science becomes politicized, and that's bad for science.
You're thinking about science like it was way back when, several hundred years ago. Some sort of pristine, value-free search for truth, forever walled off from politics, the larger society, and all that.
Yeah, well, it's good enough for Galileo. Why isn't it good enough for you?
Well, because contemporary science is too big, it's too expensive, and it's too high stakes to be walled off from politics. Well, come on, say you're the National Institutes for Health. You've got billions of dollars to hand out in research grants, but you've also got scads of scientifically worthy proposals to choose from among. You got proposals on cancer, you got the brain, on aging, on prenatal care. You can't fund them all. How do you decide?
Well, how about, say, deciding on the basis of scientific merit?
Yeah, but suppose they all have equal scientific merit. Suppose they're all groundbreaking stuff. That doesn't mean, though, that they're equally deserving of public funds. Look, deciding which things deserve to be funded, especially with public money, is inescapably a matter of values. And yes, John, that means politics.
You're using the term politics in a certain sense, so that any time public money is involved, any time there's a decision about public money, it's a matter of politics. So you've got a point in that sense. But when I say politics just distorts science, I mean something different. Take the debate over climate change. Now, why do some people insist on denying that changing human activity might help with global warming and it might have made a massive contribution to the problem in the first place? Why do they deny that in spite of the you know, really considerable, possibly overwhelming scientific consensus to the contrary.
Well, yeah, that's a question. I think the answer is they feel like their way of life is threatened, and they don't want to change.
But if you were to ask them straight up, they wouldn't say that. They'd try to argue science with you. They'd insist that what you take to be settled science isn't really settled at all.
Yeah, but they're just flapping their lips when they say that. Do you really think they truly, sincerely believe that stuff?
Well, I think they're utterly sincere.
No, come on. How could they be utterly sincere?
Because they're engaging in motivated cognition. They're letting their desires and political agendas determine how they assess the evidence and what they're willing to believe on the basis of that evidence. Now, that's not a good thing. That's an irrational thing.
I've got no brief for climate change deniers, so you got a point. But I got to say, we all engage in what you call motivated cognition all the time, don't we?
I certainly hope not.
No, come on. Suppose you know, unbeknownst to me, that my most trusted friend has robbed a bank. And you're going to tell me about it. I wouldn't want to believe you. I wouldn't want to believe it for a second. And just because I wouldn't want to believe you, I'd subject any evidence that you offered to me. No, you didn't really see him. He couldn't have been there. I'd subject it to intense scrutiny. Now, that's all the climate change deniers are doing. And, you know, I have to admit, it seems perfectly human.
Perfectly human, but not perfectly rational. When you start thinking that way, you're going to end up like the battered wife who's desperate to keep her marriage intact and refuses to believe the overwhelming evidence that her husband isn't going to change. We in California, we think, well, the jet stream, it's going to come to its senses. You know, just give it a little time. It doesn't realize how much it's hurting us.
Yeah, you know, okay, look. Anything can be taken to extremes. I grant you that. But I still say you're living in a fantasy. There's no way, no way whatsoever. You can just totally shield your beliefs from being affected by your interests. Cognition is necessarily motivated in the way you want to dismiss.
Well, I don't know. I think that's what the scientific method is all about. Unbiased, dispassionate, disinterested search for truth. Not in it turning out one way or another, but in learning what the truth is, whatever it turns out to be.
Haven't you read your Nietzsche? I don't agree with you that we're interested in the truth, whatever it is. Some truths just aren't worth knowing. Only truths that serve our genuine interest are even worth pursuing. So the interests shape everything.
Nietzsche. Well, Nietzsche's theorem, something about chemistry. Then why should I care what this... lunatic German said about science. I'm not convinced, not at all. But I guess we need some more food for thought. So we sent our roving philosophical reporter, Shuka Kalantari, out to explore how political intervention in science can actually be life-saving, especially for women. She files this report.
In the late 1950s, engineers created the crash test dummy. It was a brilliant idea, and it helped save a lot of lives.
These scientifically advanced lifelike dummies are helping General Motors lead the industry in safety-related research by demonstrating how the human body withstands force.
The crash test dummy was modeled after the height, weight, and proportions of an average white male. But that's not too helpful for a pregnant female.
We have had crash test dummies, you know, to test for car safety for many, many years. But no one really thought about the impact of the seatbelt on the pregnant belly.
That's Londa Schiebinger from Stanford. She's director of a program called Gendered Innovations in Science, Medicine, and Engineering.
The seatbelt is supposed to stay low and flat across your waist. But when you're pregnant, it doesn't stay down there. It just creeps up. And then if you're in a small car accident, that belt is going to press in on the pregnant belly and damage the fetus.
Car companies didn't think to make a pregnant dummy until the early 2000s. Even though a woman's chances of getting into a car accident goes up by 42% in her second trimester. Schiebinger says a lot of people lobbied to get a female crash test dummy. It was political action that created that change in engineering. Politics can also be helpful in medicine. Consider drug testing. Before a drug is available to the public, it goes through different phases of testing. The problem is, these clinical trials used to be done exclusively on men. That led to a lot more women getting severe side effects from new treatments. People like Schiebinger lobbied to change that.
A lot of people think of science as a self-correcting system, But often when it comes to gender or ethnicity, you know, it isn't self-correcting. It took a law. It took, you know, Congress had to pass a law to insist that women be included in clinical trials, and expense couldn't be an excuse.
Before new drugs are tested on humans, they're often tested on small animals, like mice. Now get this, those mice have almost always been male too. But why?
Because there's the pesky hormones. The women have cycles, and little rats have four-day cycles. Oh my goodness. So in order to keep things constant, the idea is that you use males. Okay, well, that doesn't really work, does it? Because we release drugs to the human population, of which 50% is having hormonal cycles.
It took until May 2014 before medical studies included female lab animals and female cells and tissues in clinical trials. Schiebinger says it wouldn't have happened without political action. She says the idea that science and politics don't mix is simply naive, because science is political at its very core.
Science depends on human decision making, and we have to realize that how we fund science and the priorities that we set for what we know determine to a certain extent what we know.
Politics is what got us a pregnant crash test dummy over 50 years after the first dummy was created. It's why we now include females and female rodents in medical testing. Schiebinger says there's always going to be good politics and bad politics in science. But like it or not, the two will always be bedfellows. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Shuka Kalantari.